Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Each week, we feature different topics concerning issues that sometimes can be difficult to talk about. These issues concern children and adults who may be autistic, have Asperger's, or have mental disorders of any kind. We will discuss law enforcement and how they interact with these persons. Now, let's start the show.
And good evening again, everybody. And thank you for tuning in to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Tonight we have...
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Let's...
Okay, everybody, we're having technical difficulties, but we're going to get through it because the devil is a liar. Right now, I'm saying that in the name of Jesus. So we're going on, and we're talking about suicide tonight, and maybe somebody doesn't want somebody to hear this, but I think it's a very, very important subject, and someone needs to hear it. So we're talking about suicide, which is the act of intentionally causing one's own death. Risk factors include mental disorders such as depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, personality disorders, and substance abuse, including alcoholism and opioids. And tonight, my guest will be Ms. Stephanie Grimes, who survived 6 attempts at suicide. She struggled years with depression, anxiety, and bullying, and she blamed herself for her struggles and pain. A poem she wrote about herself inspired her to rebuild her life again. Today, she's able to discuss her story with others in a way that no one patients and outreach. She's able to relate to those who struggle with depression and suicide. In these powerful presentations, she openly shares her personal story, her poems, and the fundamentals of suicide prevention. And what we're going to do right now is take a break. And when I come back, I'm going to introduce to you my guest for the night, Ms. Stephanie Grimes.
Want to start a business or have tax issues? We know exactly how to handle your individual needs. We personalize each individual and give you the time required to focus on your needs. We audit you before the IRS does. The IRS is not on your side, but we are. We set up companies, do tax preparation, tax and retirement planning, bookkeeping, IRS audits, and reviews. Please call me, Deborah Mitchell, owner of Mitchell & Company, for a free consultation at 248-354-5122. And visit my website, MitchellTaxAccounting.com.
Is your food bland and you want to spice it up? Does it taste like something is missing? What's missing is my seasoning, Butch's Bodacious Seasoning, all-purpose seasoning, good on absolutely everything but ice cream. I'm Linda Porter, President and CEO of Butch's Bodacious Seasoning. To get the spice back in your life, call me at 313-393-2738. You won't regret it. Thank you.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White.
Hi, and we're back with the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. My name is Jenny White, and I thank you for tuning in tonight. And right now, I'm going to introduce my guest to you, Ms. Stephanie Grimes. Hi, Stephanie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about who Miss Stephanie Grimes is?
Okay, Stephanie Grimes is a devoted, motivated, go-getter individual that has been through so many trials and tribulations throughout my lifetime to where I am now, through struggles and pain and crying and laughing, and you know, God spared me and I'm here to talk.
Well, we thank you that you are here to talk. So do you want to start? Where do you want to start? Why did you try to take your life?
The first time I tried to take, you know, take my life, I was in the ninth grade. I really struggled with how dark I was. I just felt like I wasn't, you know, worth anything, that I wasn't as pretty as all the other girls, just because of my skin complexion. So I kind of struggled with that, and just being depressed and not knowing how to kind of channel that and find somebody to kind of communicate with. So I actually had my first attempt when I was in high school, and it was right before our homecoming dance, ninth grade. So I just, you know, I just felt like I didn't really need to be here. Like, if I was gone, like, nobody would miss me. And that was when it all first started.
Did your parents know how you felt, or you didn't share with them how you felt?
I didn't share with them how I felt, because at that time I kind of felt like I was going to be a burden, or if I did say anything that I wasn't going to get the response that I wanted. So I was really good at, like, masking my feelings and, you know, like, how, you know, things were going on with me. I was just able to put on these different masks every day so that nobody could even notice that there was something wrong with me.
But I know you had to have a really good girlfriend or something that you might share your secrets with.
No, well, not at that time. Like, I had friends, but I felt that if I disclosed any of that stuff to them, they would talk about me, and it would have made the situation worse. Because at that time, like, you never really heard anybody say, like, oh, yeah, I'm really depressed, or I want to kill myself. And it was like, when people said stuff like that, it was like, oh, she's crazy. You know, we don't want to be, you know, around that type of person. So I just kind of felt like if I kind of kept it to myself, then, you know, I could try to figure it out.
Okay. So do you mind if I ask you what you did?
I took some pills. My aunt actually, you know, worked at the hospital. So I actually did some research first before I took them. And I called 911 and I asked the operator if somebody took, you know, an X amount of pills, like, what would happen? And she said, well, you know, they would need to, you know, seek, you know, medical treatment. And then she asked me, like, is there something wrong? And I was like, no, and I hung up the phone. So I just took, like, a variety of pills, like, not really knowing what they were. I just grabbed them from my aunt's room and took them. And then I just went, you know, because we stayed in a two-family flat. And I came back downstairs where my friend was, and I was like, yeah, I'm ready to go to the dance. Like, nothing had even happened. And before we could even leave, I just got really sick and, you know, had passed out. And that's when I went to the hospital, and they had to, like, give me charcoal to kind of, you know, help with that. And I remember the doctor coming in, and he was asking my mother, like, has she ever done anything like this before? Has she said anything to you? And they were just like, no. And it was kind of, you know, kind of brushed off, because nobody wants their child to be looked at as though there's something wrong. So if I kind of minimize it, then, you know, they'll leave it alone. And that's what happened.
Okay. So after you got better from that, did your mom or your aunt say anything about it to you?
No, it was like after, like we left the hospital, and you know how I would say is if you have a cut and your mom cleans it up and puts a Band-Aid on it and you're okay, that's how the situation was. It was like it was talked about then, and once we got back home, it was like never brought up again. So I wouldn't even say that I was fine. I was just able to kind of deal with it because, like, at that point, I really had no choice.
Okay, well, how long after that first attempt did you try again?
I waited till 10th grade, and I tried it again. And I did the same thing, just took more than I did the first time. But, like, at that time, you know, they went through the whole thing again, and, you know, they asked, you know, has she ever done this before? Has she ever thought about this before? And they were like, no, she's never, you know, did anything like this before.
Oh, wow.
And it was kind of like, okay, you know, it, once again, like, it was something that was like, okay, yeah, we're not about to open this up and, you know,
right.
have the whole family knowing and all of
the
that. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so
stigma.
After that,
keep it quiet.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So after that, I did good for, you know, the rest of high school. I maintained. I wouldn't say that I was good. I maintained. You know, I ended up getting pregnant my 12th grade year with my son. So to me, that was like a safe haven for me
okay.
that I felt like, okay, I'm going to love this child more than, you know, my mom or my dad or my family would love me. So, you know, went through that, and I graduated from high school, and I went to Wayne State. And at that time, I was living with my grandmother, and I was still having these thoughts and these feelings and not really knowing, like, what to do with them and how to figure things out. And I just always felt that even the people that were around me, that they were talking about me, that nobody liked me, and that was just the issue I had with myself, but, you know, kind of struggled with that.
Even though you
but,
had
you
the
know,
child.
Yeah, even though I had my son, and it just, something still was missing, like something was missing, and I just was like, okay, I don't know what it is, like something's wrong, and I just, you know, I started, you know, I started drinking, and it was just social at first, but just trying to find something to kind of numb the pain, but drinking makes it worse. So then, like, I tried it again. Like, each time I did it, I just kind of tried to figure out, take, what would happen, and, you know, I just kind of felt, I felt worthless. I really felt like I was, like, the scum of the earth, and I was just,
oh,
like, the
wow.
worst thing that could possibly be here.
Oh,
so,
I'm so sorry
yeah.
you felt that way. I'm sorry if anyone feels that way. That is
yeah.
so hard to deal with. I can kind of imagine, but I can't imagine what you've gone through. But
yeah.
now you had your child, and you were, you know, caring for your child, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
I was, you know, trying to be the best, yeah, trying to be the best, you know, mother that I could. But whenever you have something that's weighing on you that's so heavy and you just try to pretend like nothing's happening, it's really hard because I put on a straight face for a lot of people. And even to this day, people will say, I never knew anything was wrong with you because you never seemed like there was anything wrong. And I was just like, yeah, because I was really good at pretending to be somebody else, because I would wake up every day and say, okay, today I'm going to be this person, or today I'm going to be this person. And that's literally what I did, is pretended to be different people just to kind of make myself feel good.
Oh, okay. So were there any movie stars in that thinking that you were going to be someone different?
No, it wasn't even like movie stars. It was just like I felt like, okay, if I wear all black today, like I'm going to be gothic, so maybe nobody would pay attention to me. Or maybe today I'm going to, you know, be this person. So it was like every day, like I tried to, you know, make myself feel a little bit better. But, you know, it doesn't work when you're in that depression stage. Like you try to make it work, but it's difficult.
I'm sure. Okay, Stephanie, we're going to take a break right now, and we're going to come back.
Okay.
If you are in need of life insurance, auto or home insurance, or need help in getting out of debt, call your helpful insurance agents at Prime Financial Services. Did you know if you add a child rider to your life insurance policy, you can add multiple children for the price of one, starting at $10,000 worth of coverage for under $10. Call today for a free quote at 313-293-0979. Mention you heard this ad on this show for a free gift.
We'll be right back after these messages.
My name is Sheila White. I am the president and co-founder of Her Cries Are Heard, an organization that focuses on preventing violence against females. One in three women have been victims of physical abuse or violence by an intimate partner or non-partner within their lifetime. 94% of women killed by men were murdered by someone they knew. Violence can affect a woman's physical and mental health and also negatively affect her children. In 1991, my sister was murdered by her husband. And in 2013, my niece was murdered by a man who followed her home from a party. Being a victim of violence is devastating to the victim and the victim's family. Help us to help you. Help us to prevent this from happening to you or someone you love. Please look at our website, www.hercriesareheard.org, for the prevention tools and referrals to help save lives.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White. Okay. I was looking at your website, and it says that suicide is a lifelong battle that many can't fight on their own. We need so many voices to be heard. Bullying is something that spreads rapidly with no warning. We would like for you to engage in some positive conversations to help encourage those who may be depressed. So is that something that you experienced, bullying?
Yes, I experienced, you know, bullying when I was in elementary school and middle school. And it was so crazy because I was being bullied by a boy in elementary school. And usually, you know, your parents will say, oh, yeah, they, you know, they like you. That's what, you know, that's why they're bothering you. But it was like after, you know, the first couple of times, it was just like, okay, something's wrong. Like, why is this kid always bothering me? And it was just like he, you know, made fun of, like, how dark I was, even though I already had an issue with that already. But, you know, dealing with that, the name calling, and then middle school, like, you know, I would say I have nice hair, but a lot of the girls kind of, you know, still made fun of me and, you know, talked about how dark I was. So it was just I had an issue with that because it was just like, oh, if I was like two shades lighter, you know, maybe nobody would say anything to me. But, yeah, it was kind of difficult.
Okay. Right now I'd like to tell my listeners, if you are listening and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you may press the 1 and then you will be in queue. And you can ask your question or make your comment. Okay, you were on number 2. What happened the third time? Because now you have a child.
Yeah, so the third time was still the same thing. I, you know, researched about the pills, and I had, you know, did another overdose, and that happened that time. Like, each time I, you know, I tried to attempt suicide, it was with pills. I never, you know, did anything as far as, like, trying to hang myself or, you know, drink myself to death. I wasn't a cutter, so I never did anything like that. So those first three, you know, that's how that kind of happened. But with that fourth one, I took some, you know, I took a lot of Aleve and Motrin at that time. And I, you know, came down the stairs and I was, you know, staying with my mother at this time. And I just got really sluggish and it was like, okay, my mother figured, like, okay, something's wrong. Like you can't keep doing this. And I remember I just kept telling her, like, I'm really sorry. And I just remember when I got to the hospital and they kept asking, and I was just like, you know, I didn't want to be here. And they had said that I told the social worker that I didn't want my son anymore. And it was kind of like I was stuck between reality and some type of world. I have no idea, you know, what it was, but I they ended up putting me into the hospital. So I remember I was at St. John Hospital, and I remember I was there with all of these people, and I remember saying to myself, like, I'm not supposed to be in here with these people. Like, these people are crazy. Like, I know I'm not supposed to be in here. And I remember the therapist, and she was like, well, what makes you different from everybody else here? And I was just like, they're crazy and I'm not. Like, I'm not supposed to be here. And I remember her saying, so you feel that you're better than everybody else here? And I remember, like, saying, like, yes, I am. You know, like, I just, you know, have some stuff going on and that's why I'm here. And I remember her putting me out of the group because she was like, if you can't come to grips with what you've done, then there's no point of you, like, being in group because it's supposed to help you. And so at that point, I was just, like, really upset, and, you know, my anxiety was really bad, and I was just, like, I remember kept calling my mother, and I was like, you need to come and pick me up. Like, I don't need to be here. And she was like, you need to be there because you need help, because you can't keep doing this. And I just remember begging her, like, please come and get me. Like, I'm not going to do it again. Like, just come and get me. And, you know, after a couple of days, you know, she kind of broke down, and I remember her coming to get me, and I was just like, I'm not supposed to be in here. And at that point, it was just like, okay, I'm just saying to people what they want to hear so I could get my way is what I did, so that I didn't have to stay there.
Okay, at any time you were there, did your child cross your mind?
He did. He crossed my mind, but it was just like all the hurt that I had going on, I kind of felt like I'm not capable of even giving him what he needs. Like, and then I started to think, like, well, I don't even know if my own child even likes me. But it was just like, he was young, so it's not that I can say he didn't like me, but that's just how I felt.
Okay, and you felt that someone else could raise him better than you could?
Yeah, at that time, yeah, I kind of felt like, yeah, somebody else could probably do, you know, a better job than me. But then in another sense, I was just like, okay, this is my child. I need to, you know, be there for him. But just with, you know, so much that I had going on, it just, you know, didn't kind of help.
I have a caller that wants to say something.
Okay,
caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What is your
question? How are you this evening?
I'm fine. How you doing?
Okay. I can relate to our guest tonight because where she was, her skin color made her very sensitive. It was my weight. And from the time that I came on this earth, all I can remember when I was 9 years old, I was 190 pounds. And now I wish I could get back down to 190 pounds. because I'm more than that. But it will make you sensitive. People may, it's back during that time, if you were heavy, you had to wear black, blue, brown. You couldn't wear light colors. And not only that, but I was very sick with asthma. I mean, I was sick with it. So sometimes, I remember this one time, I was going to Miller. It was a junior high school at that time. And I had to walk down the grave type, you know, Waterloo in Detroit, walk past down past the graveyard. And I couldn't breathe. I was holding on to the bars, the gate. And I looked at all those graves, and I said, Lord, I was mad at those people because they were dead and they were at peace. And here I was laboring for breath. And I said, and then my parents had our home was very stormy. It was very, very stormy at that time. My mother and father, they fought like crazy. It was just something that kept you upset all the time. And not only you had your own personal struggle, they had theirs, and then I was sick. It seemed like every other night I was down at Detroit receiving hospital getting those special shots for asthmatics to try to breathe and trying to get to school and things like that. And I just sat down, and I never forget, I sat down. I was about 12 during that time. But anyway, I can relate to her. Her thing was her color. But one thing I had to find out, would come to grips with, is the fact that I'm not wearing no blues or no blacks anymore. I'm sorry, making me some clothes, and I put on hot pink. I put on, you know, I'm not going to go according to the status quo. No, I put on this. I dyed my hair, you know, to make me feel good. I didn't care what anybody else said anymore. You know, I'm me. I had to come to grips with the fact that I am me, and I'm going to be me. I don't care what anybody said. And I would dress to light color. I had to go to Lane Bryan to buy some stockings and stuff like that. But I just made up my mind, I am me. I'm going to accept me as long as God lets me stay on this earth. And that's when I started having victory in my life in that area. Sure, you're going to what you can't change, what the Bible says, can an Ethiopian change his color? No, you can't.
Yeah.
you can't change it. You know, I could change my weight, but there was a reason why I was so heavy. Something was there that was bothering me, and it still is with me. But I would try to lose weight, and I would do this and that. But then something was triggered where I would find myself back heavy again. But I said, listen, I had to make peace with myself and my body. Peace with myself and my body. This is me. I'm going to look nice. Whether somebody likes me or not, I'm going to like myself because I am me and I deserve to be loved. If Lucy is the only person in Lucy's life, Lucy has to love Lucy and emphasize how God loves Lucy just like she is. And that's what even today, when I wake up in the morning, I have to remind myself, God loves me and I love Lucy too. I don't care what anybody says. And so far I've made it. That's all I just wanted to say. But it is, but it will make you, excuse me, I got all this, my grandchildren running me nuts now. But I had to love myself. And you are worthy of love. You have to give it to yourself. When you love yourself, then people want to be around somebody that's more positive. You have to kill the love no matter what you look like.
I love Lucy. Lucy.
Yes.
I love you.
Okay, then. Okay, love you.
I love you.
Thanks so much. These kiddos are giving me an echo behind me. I was looking today. I was coming home, and I saw this woman. You know how the kids spill water on you know, near the freeway and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at a little girl that was up there, and when I looked at her, she just had some arms with no hands. And so I bought some water and stuff. So I was back up there today, and I looked, and there was an older woman that was there that had no arms. They had arms with no hands at all. So it might be something genetic with her. But you have to love yourself the way you are. You're still a person. God still has a plan for your life. You know?
Yeah.
Everything can't be like the white, like the dominant race, light skin with the long black and all of this. I was looking at Steve Harvey today, and all the black women on that program, everybody had these long, what do they call them, set. Everybody wearing the long hair, the down. What happened to the afro? What happened to the other things that made black women look beautiful? we're so busy pushing ourselves towards what the dominant race wants you to look like in order to be accepted that we've lost ourselves. We've lost ourselves. You have to feel good about yourself. Know who you are. Thankful to God how He made you and strut like you. You know, hey, they have to get it. They have to come up to my standards, and that's the way I see it now. Love you,
Miss Lucy. I thank you for your comment. I thank you, and I love you.
Thanks so much. And so I guess it's interesting, but you have to love yourself. You are worth being on this earth. You are worth being on this earth. Without apologizing for yourself. Okay, love you.
Okay, love you too. Would you like to respond, Miss Stephanie?
I would say I agree with what she said. I do have to love myself, and I had to wait till I was able to get to that point to love who I am and love how I look and just being me. So I definitely say I agree with that.
Okay. Well, I have another caller who'd like to make a comment or ask a question.
Okay.
Are you there, caller?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I just wanted to ask a couple questions to your guest, and because I came in after she had already started speaking. But what was the reason why she had attempted suicide? Was it low self-esteem? What was it that made you want to kill yourself?
It was the low self-esteem, feeling worthless. And also my skin complexion was a factor too.
Now, what was it about your skin complexion? Are you dark skin?
I'm dark skin. I didn't like how dark I was. So that was an issue for me. I felt that, if I was lighter, then I wouldn't have had as many, complications and struggles that I had.
Okay. How about your weight? Are you overweight?
No, I'm not overweight. I was never overweight. I was a thin girl. So I was never overweight. I just had a lot of, depression that was going on that I was not able to kind of, channel myself and figure out by myself.
Now, so have you? You're in a better place now. You've done therapy, and no longer have those thoughts, or do they still come up from time to time?
No, I did go through therapy, and therapy does a lot for people, and I had a good therapist, but I found that what really, really helped me was me being at church. And we had a guest pastor at my church that basically kind of prophesied everything that, I went through and, just basically let me know, this is the path of where it was going to take me, and I needed to, get myself together so that I can help other people. And a lot of the reasons why, after, so many years, I figured out why I was having all these unbalanced emotions and feelings is because I had a brain tumor. So that kind of, factored in with the rest of everything else that I had going on. So it was difficult, but no, I'm in a wonderful place right now. I definitely am.
You say you had a brain tumor?
Yes.
Now, did they operate on it? What happened with the brain tumor?
I had surgery in 2004. I had a pituitary adenoma. It set on my optic nerve, so that I did have surgery. It was removed.
Did it affect your vision?
Yes, it affected my vision and everything, hormones, everything.
Okay. Now, are you currently on medication for depression or anything?
I only take medication for anxiety. Depression, I don't. I just kind of get a flux of anxiety, and, you know, sometimes it gets a little overwhelming. But other than that, no.
So how do you cope when things get rough for you, like they do for everybody?
So my whole thing now is writing, and that's another tool that I use when I do my presentations with the kids. I write poetry. Me writing, it kind of helps soothe, like, what's going on, because I'm able to channel my feelings and put that on paper. So before I wasn't able to do that because I didn't know how to. So I write a lot. I write a lot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd like to, you know, just share a story of one of my coworkers that I was talking with yesterday, and she was saying this week is the week that her 13-year-old son committed suicide 3 years ago, and so she's having a hard time. He hung himself or strangled himself on the staircase with a T-shirt, and I guess she said the T-shirt was wrapped so tight around his throat that she had to cut it off. And so I guess, you know, he was in ICU, you know, for a week and passed away, you know, the following week. But, you know, it's something that she constantly deals with as far as the grief, because she was the one that found him. And, you know, she was just saying that the therapy sessions, she didn't feel that the therapist was as aware and as in tune as she could have been to be more helpful, and that, you know, they were just trying to continue to give him medications, which, you know, might solve one, you know, medicine might solve one thing but cause another problem.
So
had you thought about, well, I guess, you know, suicide is a selfish act, you know, and you really don't, you know, because of the feelings that you're having, you're not able to really be concerned with how the other people that love you will, you know, how it will affect them.
I agree with that.
How old are you?
I am 34 years old.
Okay. You have any children, or do you want to have any?
No, I have two children. I have a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old.
Okay. Do you have, is depression, does that run in your family, or just happen to be something that you were, you know, just happened to
do? That was something that kind of went through the family, but I think, like, my, you know, stream of depression kind of, you know, was based upon, like, my own, you know, kind of self-inflictions and things that I had going on.
So how much of a role do you think the brain tumor played in your imbalance mentally and hormonally?
It played a role, but I wouldn't say that it was significant, because once again, like, that was something that, you know, I had going on and wasn't happy with. So whenever you're not happy with something, you can make it worse than what it is. Almost, you know, like a hypochondriac, you can make it worse. So.
And you said that you tried, it was with pills?
Yes.
You tried. You didn't want to shoot yourself or anything, any other means of suicide? You didn't want to try anything else?
No, like, because the research that I did when I actually, you know, got to my sixth attempt, I just basically did more research at that time. I found out what medication would cause, like, heart failure, you know, will cause for you to lose your eyesight and, you know, things like that. So I, like, each time somebody's contemplating suicide, like, we're thinking. Like, it's not something, you know, sometimes it's not just random. You know, like, we've had time to sit and kind of think about things. So that was what I did, you know, that last time, and I put myself in a coma. And it was like on the movies where, you know, they show people having this out-of-body experience, and I had that out-of-body experience, and I seen all of these people, my family, and the only person that I could really focus on was my son. And I was just like, who's going to be here to, you know, protect him from whatever he has fear of, and who's going to be there for him to protect him if he's getting bullied? And it was a lot. And it was like after I had that, that's where I kind of felt like, okay, Stephanie, you got to get yourself together. You have to figure out a way to kind of get through this. And that's when it happened.
Now, do you have any lasting effects from any of the suicide attempts that you deal with now physically?
No. No, not at all. I'm perfectly healthy.
Okay, very good. And one other question. The thoughts of suicide ever creep back into your mind and you have to, you know, kind of compartmentalize it and deal with it? I mean, because, you know, we all, sometimes our minds can play tricks on us, and sometimes we can think crazy things. And, you know, does it ever come back and haunt you, or, you know, make you feel like the devil is talking to you, telling you to do something crazy?
I wouldn't say that it kind of creeps up on me. The devil is always running rapid. And it's like with me taking upon this role for me to help other people, it's like I'm being attached to somebody else's emotions, and it's a spiritual warfare. So it's kind of like I have to mentally prepare myself for what I'm about to hear and what's about to go on. So I get my days where I'm like overwhelmed and worked up, and it, you know, the thought will come to where I'm like, oh my God, I really can't do this. And I'm just like, I know that's the devil trying to knock me down so that I can say, yeah, I'm going to convert back to my old ways and, you know, do this. But I have gotten to that point to where I'm able to, you know, block that stuff and channel myself like, hey, it's somebody else out here that needs you. Your kids need you. So, it's a battle, but I'm winning because God is right behind me each and every step of the way.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, I'll definitely be praying for you, you know, your continued strength and prosperity, and, you know, just the fact that you have a testimony and you're able to help others who may be contemplating suicide as a means to ease the pain that they're dealing with when, you know, they become hopeless and don't see any other way. Or, if you know, especially young people who, you know, just don't have the coping skills, you know, yet. Or maybe people that are, you know, have a mental illness and, you know, it's either diagnosed or undiagnosed, because a lot of times I know the medicines that they diagnose you can, you know, make you even crazier, you know. So, you know, I commend you for what you're doing and giving your life to Christ and you know, working to help save others by telling your story. So I commend you for that, and God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you, too.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, caller. I thank you for calling. You're good.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right. And we will go to break.
Do you know a youth in need of a place to live? Have you always wanted to make a difference in the city of Detroit, but not known how? The answer to both of these questions is Covenant House, Michigan. Covenant House is a youth homeless shelter serving 18 to 24-year-olds in the city of Detroit with education, resources, job preparation, and so much more. If you'd like to learn more about these programs, please call 313-463-2000 or look us up on the web at www.covenanthousemi.org.
We'll be right back after these messages.
South is a user experience design and development shop located in Philadelphia. We have over 12 years of experience in the visual communication field with a long list of satisfied customers. We provide innovative solutions for existing and emerging platforms. Got a plan? Let our team of talented professionals help bring it to life. You can reach us at 215-701-3934. You can visit our website, www.57south.com. We look forward to kickstarting your next project. Thank you. Have a great day.
This broadcast of the PJC Media Network seeks to present wholesome, thought-provoking, and entertaining content. However, the views expressed by the hosts of PJC Media are theirs and theirs alone. They do not reflect the views of this network or its affiliates. Please utilize listener discretion.
This is Terry from Texas, and I love listening to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White.
Well, we're back with the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show, and tonight we're talking about suicide, and we have as our guest Ms. Stephanie Grimes, who attempted, but thank God it didn't work. She attempted suicide 6 times. So, Stephanie, I'd like to ask you, how did you tell your children?
Telling my children was something that was hard for me, because I knew that the questions they would ask, they would, you know, they asked me, like, why would you do that? Like, was it my son? He's like, was it really that bad? Like, did you really not like yourself? Like, I don't think there's nothing wrong with you. And it was just like, you know, during that time, you know, that's how I felt. And I stressed to my kids every day for them to let me know how they're feeling, like what's going on with them. And I would even say the most prepared or knowledgeable parent can still not see those signs that, you know, we talk about. So it's hard. It's really difficult, but I try to be as open-minded with them as possible just so that they can understand, like, this was real. This is something that happens, and this is something that I did, and I'm trying to make sure I prevent other people from, you know, from doing it, from them getting to that point. So I try to be as open with them as possible and still be truthful with them and not sugarcoat things, because I feel like if you try to, you know, shelter your kids and not give them the full-fledged story of anything, you know, it kind of messes them up, because right now they see so much from social media and everything. So I just feel like I have to be open with them for them, you know, so they'll understand.
Well, that's a good thing. So we got to 4. What about 5? How old were you at 5? Because you had graduated, right?
Yeah, I had graduated, and I was at Wayne State. And at that time, the 5th one, I think I was probably about 20, maybe 23. So I hadn't got to 25 yet. But just still, I felt that, like, now that I look back, if I would have stayed a little longer, you know, maybe, and then even with that attempt, you know, like going back into the hospital and, you know, staying at, you know, one of the facilities, you know, I was there for a week for, like, that fifth attempt. And I feel like when I was there, I didn't get anything out of it. I had a different counselor, and I'm like, I was able to see, like, how some people felt with connecting with a therapist that they don't connect with. And it was like at that time, I just did everything that I needed to do to get out, but I didn't get anything out of any of those sessions. Even the medication that they put me on, it to me, I just felt even numb. And it was like, okay, this is supposed to help and it's not helping. And, you know, that was a struggle with the medication and getting adjusted to how that was making you feel. And it was a lot for me to deal with. It was a lot.
Did you graduate from Wayne State?
No, I actually stopped going to school.
Okay.
I had consumed myself so much with my own thoughts and, you know, everything that was going on, and I was just like, yeah, I can't do this. This isn't going to work. I can't be in school. And so I just worked, you know, I just worked.
So the last time, what happened?
So the last time, this was like, I was saying to myself, like, today is the day that I'm going to die. I'm like, I'm going to do everything possible to make this work. And I did some more research, and I just was like, okay, if I take this and this, this is going to happen. This is going to start to shut down. And I remember going to the emergency, like, quite often, and, you know, was telling them, like, oh, I'm having really bad headaches. I don't know where it's coming from. And, of course, they will prescribe you something because with headaches, you can't really figure out where it's coming from and, you know, what's going on with it. And I remember that day before I went to the hospital and had let them know that I was having some really bad headaches, and they prescribed me some medication. And at this time, I was working at the mall, and I was training somebody, and I walked out in the middle of the mall where they have the little concession stores at the mall, and I remember asking the gentleman there, and I'm like, I need, you know, 24 packs of Aleve. And it was like I was sitting there waiting, like, is this guy going to ask me why do I need so much Aleve? And it was like, maybe he's going to ask me, and then I can explain, and, you know, I could, you know, let him know how I'm feeling. And he just asked me for the money, and that was it.
Huh.
And it was like, at that time, I was just like, yeah, that just kind of gave me the green light. Like, okay, he doesn't care either. So just, you know, finish with what you were going to do. And I remember coming back in the store, and I told the guy that I was working with, and I told him, I said, you know, you may want to call your family to come pick you up early, you know, because I won't be here. And I remember him laughing, and he was like, yeah, the mall don't close to 9 o'clock. And he was like, yeah, we still going to be here because we have to close. And I was like, no, I'm not going to be here. And he thought that I was joking. And I went in the back, and I took those Aleve that I got from the concession. And then I have some other pills from the hospital that I had from the day before. And I took those, and I came back out, and I stood by the rack. And I remember him fixing some stuff in the front. And I remember getting, like, really dizzy, and I was thinking to myself, like, yes, this is really working. It's about to happen. Like, this is it. And my eyesight started to go blurry, and the next thing I know, I fell over on the rack. So my eyesight was, like, gone. I couldn't see anything, and I could just hear him screaming, and I guess, like, more people came in the store. and they were trying to figure out, like, what was going on. But in my mind, I was just like, I did it right this time. Like, it's really working. Oh, and God. I remember, you know, hearing the EMTs when they came in and, like, all of the noise and them trying to figure out what to do. And even my ride through the to the hospital, like, hearing that siren just going, and I was just like, this is really happening. And I remember, you know, being at the hospital, and I remember them saying, she's coding. And after that, I couldn't hear anything else. It was just, like, complete silence. And that's when I, you know, I was out of it. And I remember having this whole out-of-body experience, and I seen my family, I seen teachers that I had from high school, like all of these people were there. And I was just sitting there and I was like, why are all these people crying? And it was just like, I'm laying right here. Like, why are they crying? And I was thinking to myself, like, all of the people that told me that I was never going to be anything, and, you know, how stupid and dumb I was. And, you know, that it just all kind of, you know, came back to me, and the only thing that I could see was my son, and he was just standing there so hopeless and just looking, and I was like, what am I doing? And I was just like, who's going to be there to protect him? Like, who's going to be there to, you know, help him if he's struggling with things? Like, who's going to be there? Like, and I'm not here. Like, who's going to do that for him? And it was at that point I had to realize, like, it wasn't time for me to go. And as many attempts as I had, you know, anything could have happened. And it was like, you know, God was sparing me because he was like, this is not your time to go. And you just keep trying and trying, and it's not your time.
Oh, wow. That's really something. Okay, so Miss Stephanie, you came out of that great. We're thankful for that. Now, tell us about your organization.
So my organization, I go to middle schools and high schools and do presentations on suicide prevention. The bulk of my presentations is me telling people about my own story and my lived experiences and what happened with me, and just basically letting the kids know that, you know, things happen. And I always tell them, life happens. Some things we have control over and some things we don't. Like, we just have to figure out how to get over it. And, you know, I teach them about coping skills, because a lot of people don't have good coping skills, and that's something that you have to work on daily, because it's always easy for somebody to quit and give up. It's always that easy, because if you don't have somebody backing you and you don't have any type of support, it's hard. And that's what a lot of our kids are faced with, is they don't have anybody that they can talk to. They don't have anybody that they can look up to. Like, looking up to these rappers and models and all of this stuff, like, that's not something that's going to help our children. Like, we need somebody there that's going to be like, hey, you know what, I know this is rough. I know the neighborhood you stay in is bad. I know that you may be facing these different type of obstacles. So they need somebody that can talk to them. They need somebody that's going to listen. And that's basically, you know, what I do. And I get so much from these kids when I do these presentations, and it's just like I have to prepare myself, because I don't know what I'm going to hear, who's going to need me, and who's going to need my shoulder to cry on. So that's what I do with the presentations, and I'm always open. And I let the kids know, like, if you need to call me at any time of the day, I give them my cell phone number. I know some people told me, like, I don't think you should do that. But that's the difference between me and somebody else. I feel like you may be struggling with something one day and you may need to call me. And, you know, I want to have that communication open to where they feel like, okay, I can call Miss Stephanie and talk to her, and she's going to listen. Because at night when you land in a bed, and that's the time where you think the most and you're just up. So I always let them know that they can call me.
So do you just only go to schools? I mean, do you have rallies or anything like that?
I just don't go to schools. I've been to churches. I've been to, like, different, like, organizations. I'm also a certified Safe Talk instructor, which basically gets people prepared to ask that hard question to someone about, you know, if they're thinking about suicide. So I go to wherever I'm needed, and I always say that because I do, you know, workshops with parents, you know, if they want me to come to the house and, you know, speak with them, I do it all. I'm just that person that I'm not limiting myself to anything, because I feel like if God tells me to move and it's something that needs to happen, it'll happen. And I let people know, like, I'm not a certified counselor. I'm not a licensed therapist. I'm somebody that has had lived experiences. And if I need to refer you to someone, I have people to refer you to. But I would never turn anybody down, because I never know what type of state somebody's in, and they may need me.
Yes. Have you ever had, after visiting a school, have you ever had any of the students come up to you and say that they've had those types of thoughts as well?
Yes, I've had a lot of kids that have come up to me, and the majority of them have been girls. I had one girl that, you know, was a cutter, and she literally had before she came to school. So, like, those were, like, fresh cuts. And, you know, I had to, you know, those things I have to report. Like, at the end of the day, I love you to pieces, but when it comes to your safety, like, you know, I have to let somebody know that. But it's difficult. And even with the males, you know, we have a lot of the, you know, kids that are struggling with their identity and, you know, dealing with the LGBTQ community. And it's hard for our younger generation right now, because it's so much going on right now. And I'm not, you know, discrediting anybody's sexuality of whatever it is that they want to be. But at the end of the day, when anybody's talking about wanting to take their lives, like, all of that other stuff goes out the window. It's like, what can I do to help you? Like, what do you need me to do? Do I need to talk to a parent? And I've talked to quite a few parents, and, you know, a lot of them didn't like what I had to say. And I always tell them, because I had a big meeting at one school that I did my first presentation at, and I told the principal I wanted to speak with the parents first before I had the presentation. And I asked the parents, like, how many of you in here ask your children when they come home from school how their day was? And a lot of the parents were like, well, what do I need to ask my kid that for? They have school there to learn. And I said, that's the way you try to figure out where your kid is. Like, you know, your kid could tell you, you know, you need to ask your child, like, what happened at school today that was different from yesterday? Did your teacher say something to you that made you feel uncomfortable? Did your teacher say something to you that was funny that you know that they would never say? Just any little thing. Like, you have to communicate with your kids.
True.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. And you say the parent got upset with you?
Yeah, they were really upset with me, and I had never seen a group of people that were that angry all at one time just from the one question that I asked. And that's when I turned around and I said to myself, I see what the children are going through. Because you have parents, you know, that shut their kids out, block them out, and, you know, they never get to communicate with their parents. And that's where you get a lot of the kids that are contemplating suicide, because they're feeling worthless and helpless and not being able to express how they feel. So if I'm already being bullied at school and I'm coming home and being bullied too, it's like I have nowhere to turn.
Right.
So, you know, people can say it's a selfish act, but with our children, they don't have good coping skills. And if the parents aren't focusing on that, like, who's going to help them?
So how did that meeting turn out?
The meeting was, what does she know? And that's what one parent told me, like, what do you know? And until I broke it down and told them about myself, it was like everybody was like, oh, okay. It was like everybody had an aha moment. But it's just like you have to kind of pay attention to things because our children are so visual. They pay attention to every single thing. And it's like if you give your child that love and nurture, they'll be okay. Like they'll feel okay to open up to you. But if you shut them out and just don't give them any opportunity to communicate, then that's where you have the problems. Because I have a lot of parents say, well, what do I do? Like, how do I? And I'm like, do you communicate with your child on a daily basis? You should know how to communicate with your child. And, like, everything just goes haywire because you have people yelling and cursing and not really knowing how to communicate. So, you know, it just makes everything, you know, off balance and everybody's upset. And I was just like, it's just way too much going on in the world now for us to not be focusing on what's going on with people.
So how much do you think Facebook or social media plays into these things?
Oh, social media, if I could ban social media, I would, because right now our kids are so consumed with Snapchat and, you know, like that's a really big thing. Like
Twitter,
everybody wants somebody to see what they look like. Everything is a picture. Everything is a selfie or it's just like you're letting people into your personal space. And it's like that opens up for so much because it has you thinking like, okay, I can look like this person. No, I really want to look like her or I'm going to look like him. And it's where kids don't have their own identity. So it's like now we have our kids working off of everything that they see.
Well, I agree.
And it's easier for our kids to, you know, get into fights with people and for people to post things. And it's like a lot of these issues that these kids have wouldn't be able to surface if we didn't have social media for things to be posted, for it to be cyberbullying and things like that.
Yeah.
If we didn't have any of that, like that plays a factor in a lot of it. It gives those kids a platform to say, hey, I can say whatever I want to say because they can't see me. But that stuff still hurts people.
Yes,
a lot of the kids now, when I talk with them and I'll ask them, like, what do you consider to be bullying? And they'll say, well, if I'm fighting a person every day, that's bullying. Or, you know, me talking about that person isn't bullying them. And I said, well, you never know how that person on the other side feels. I said, they can laugh and joke with you, but be crying on the inside because they're trying to figure out, like, why are you talking about me? Like, I thought we were friends. So they don't know the difference because a lot of the kids feel like I'm not bullying this person. So they don't know the difference. So it's all about educating them on the do's and don'ts and what's too far and what's not too far. So that's another thing.
Okay, I agree with that. We're going to take one last break, and I'd like to tell my listeners, if you have a question or would like to make a comment after the break, then that'll be your chance. So we're going to be back.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Autism affects 1 in 68 children, sweeping all racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic groups. Autism is a lifelong brain disorder that leads to untold challenges to the physical, financial, and social well-being of people with autism and their families. Resources are stretched thin. The Autism Alliance of Michigan, a collective voice for families across the entire state, uses resources to help families battle challenges right here, right now. If you or anyone you know needs help navigating the autism journey, contact the Autism Alliance of Michigan today, 877-463-AAOM, or visit them online at aaomi.org. Autism affects 1 in 68 children, sweeping all racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic groups. Autism is a lifelong brain disorder that leads to untold challenges to the physical, financial, and social well-being of people with autism and their families. Resources are stretched thin. The Autism Alliance of Michigan, a collective voice for families across the entire state, uses resources to help families battle challenges right here, right now. If you or anyone you know needs help navigating the autism journey, contact the Autism Alliance of Michigan today, 877-463-AAOM, or visit them online at aaomi.org.
This is Jacqueline Jones Frederick of Jones and Frederick Enterprises, Inc. This incorporation consists of a tutoring business, a tutoring staffing, and a traveling business. We have served the community since 2007. Our clients are third graders to college students. We tutor in all academic subjects. Please call Jacqueline at 586-306-5487.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White.
Okay, and we're back with the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. And we're talking with Miss Stephanie Grimes. And we're talking about suicide, and we're trying to prevent it as much as we can. So, listeners, if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, now is your time. If not, I appreciate you for calling, even if you didn't ask a question or make a comment. And Ms. Grimes, I sincerely want to thank you. I know this was last minute, and I just can't thank you enough for the way you've, you know, talked about the, I mean, you know, you talked about it, and we needed to know. We needed to know. So I have one more person who has a question or would like to make a comment.
Okay.
Miss Terry, are you there?
Hi, Jenny White. How are you? Hi, Miss Grimes.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. Listen, I wanted to thank you for your story. Thank you for your bravery of recounting the painful memories of what led you to the decisions that you were making. It's like anything else in society right now, you know, whereas, you know, weaving your hair used to be looked upon differently than it is now. Everybody wears weaves. Even LGBTQ community, when it was not in to be gay, and now it's the end thing. So suicide is not new. It's been around. I have had a family member who has contemplated it. Even as a young girl growing up as a dark female, there were thoughts, you know, and my mom was too mean and all of these things. So I think when there is some self-discovery or we're trying to figure out exactly who we are, we could lean into decisions that are not popular. And it's difficult. And these kids are experiencing things that we never had to deal with. So it's magnified. And you're right. Parents need to reach out more and talk to their children. We as coworkers, even coworkers, like you talked about your coworker, we need to reach out because the first thing we want to say is, oh, I didn't know, or wow, I didn't pick it up. And so we need to connect. Even recently we've had so many suicides with some of the famous people. So it doesn't matter if you are a little chocolate child from the ghetto or if you are Kate Spade, it affects all of us. So it's a very, very
yeah.
real issue. So I'm glad that you are now taking what you had, what you learned, what you've experienced, and you are now using that for the greater good. And that's the reason why you could never be successful, because there were so many other people that you needed to touch with your story, with your courage, and with your commitment. So thank you for what you do. It's hard out here sometimes. It really is. And I have a friend right now who tells me it doesn't matter if she lives or dies, because nobody cares anyway. Everybody just wants to take things from her, and I'm trying to talk her off of a cliff because she's very, very important to all of us. It may not seem that way right now, but you know what? The sun is shining through the clouds. The clouds may obscure it, but it's always there. So for you to relate that to being in the church, and that's what saved you, and that's what grounded you, that is a great testimony. And again, God doesn't waste any of our tears, and he has used you in a mighty way. So I want to thank you again for your story. I want to thank you, Jenny White, for the platform for her to express herself. This is a very difficult subject, but I can say more people have thought about it than not. And even with these medications that we're on now, some of them say thoughts of suicide are some of the side effects. Are you serious?
That's true. Yes.
So
yes.
It makes it difficult to just try to to live, and especially if you are not grounded or grafted into the vine of the church, then you are kind of out there for the taking.
Yeah.
So thank you again, both of you, and it was a very interesting topic tonight, and I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
Ms. Terry from Texas. I appreciate you all the time. You know I do. I love you, too.
Thank you. Love you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Miss Stephanie, now it's your turn to tell us what you want to leave us with tonight.
I would say I want to leave everybody with just a notion to be more open, be more willing to let somebody else talk to you and you just listen, because a lot of times we have so many people that want to give us their, like, two cents on what they think you should and shouldn't do, but sometimes it's just best to listen. And I just want people to know that there are so many people suffering in silence, and you know it's hard for them to speak up and speak out about things. So I just want you to, if you don't take anything from this at all, but just for you to just take the time to listen. I want you to ask somebody that you don't even know or you see on a daily basis, just ask them like how they're doing, because just asking that opens up that door to say, hey, you know what, I can talk to this person at my job, or I can talk to this person at my church, or, you know, that person, you know, said hi to me, so I feel a little bit more comfortable with, you know, divulging something to them. So I just want you guys to just know that we're out here, and we don't want to die. We want somebody to take that initiative to ask us, like, hey, are you okay? Is something going on, you know, can I talk to you? So I just say, just be open, because you never know what the person next to you or behind you or driving on the side of you may be going through.
Very good. And I thank you once again for being my guest tonight. And my listeners, I thank you for calling in and listening, or I thank you for those that did ask questions and make comments. And tonight, I have one thing to say before we go, and that is, strive not to be a success, but rather to be of value. And that was stated by Mr. Albert Einstein. And with that, I will say good night.